Please subscribe and leave a review of Dorky wherever you get your podcasts. Also, you can support the pod if you'd like. You can use PayPal or Buy Me a Coffee. There are links to both methods on Dorky's website and in the show notes of this episode. Thank you so much. Before the episode, let me tell you about an amazing online boutique that I just know you're going to love. Save Boutique is a great place for clothes, accessories, and shoes. One of the great things about Save is that it's size inclusive. Most items Save offers are available in sizes from small to 3X, and they're looking into ways to offer even more sizing options. They also drop new items every week, so there's always new things to choose from. They even offer 3 buy now, pay later options: Shop Pay, Klarna, and Afterpay. One last thing, they're offering a discount to Dorky listeners. Just enter the code Dorky, that's DORKEY, all caps, no spaces, for a 10% discount. I even put a link to Save Boutique in the description notes of this episode that will take you directly there and automatically apply the discount. So check out the amazing clothes, accessories, and shoes Save Boutique has to offer. You'll be so glad you did. Hello, this is Dorky. I'm your host, April. This is a podcast about history. I'm going to be discussing events, people, and sometimes just random things from history that interest me. I am absolutely not a historian. I'm just a dork who spends a lot of time watching, reading, listening to anything I can get my hands on about history, and I want to talk about it. I think a lot can be learned from looking into the past, and I'd like to share what I've learned, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone. I had a wonderful conversation with my friend Holly Snaith, who is a historian and author. Holly has done a lot of work preserving and restoring history, and she's also doing her part to spark a love of history in future generations. I think her love of history really comes through in our conversation, and I'm so excited for you to hear it. I'm very excited about today. I'm talking with my friend, Holly Snaith. Holly is a historian, editor, and writer. Her focus is on the 20th century. She's worked at 2 presidential libraries and has written articles on presidents, first ladies, and entertainers like Marilyn Monroe, Fred Astaire, and Ginger Rogers. Holly's kind enough to come talk with me today. Holly, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on, April.
So I mentioned in your introduction that you worked at 2 presidential libraries. What presidential libraries did you work at, and what did you do there?
Well, when I was in high school, I became fascinated with Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. And after I interned at FDR's Little White House in Warm Springs, Georgia, it became my dream to make it to the FDR Library in Hyde Park, New York. And fortunately, 2 years later, I landed an internship there after I graduated with a degree in history from the University of Florida. So first at the FDR Library, I interned in the archives and I helped to digitize Sarah Delano Roosevelt's diaries, and that was FDR's mother. Then I helped to curate the Madeleine Albright Read My Pens exhibit with members of the museum team. And finally, I worked in public programming, assisting in putting together the Conversation with Madeleine Albright event. And at the same time, I started doing some freelance editing for authors, and I was so lucky to get to go to Yale to look at the William C. Bullitt papers for an author who was writing a book on Missy LeHand, who was FDR's chief secretary. So I interned there for about 6 months, and I crammed so much into just a short amount of time. And a couple years later, I went to work with the Richard Nixon Foundation in Yorba Linda, California, and that is located in the same building as the Richard Nixon Library, which is run by the National Archives and Records Administration. And there I worked in development with fundraising and as a research assistant, helping to put together historical presentations for authors and doing research and writing for the research team.
That is all so cool. You worked with the Richard Nixon Foundation, putting together an exhibit on the First Lady Pat Nixon at USC. Tell me about that.
Well, the University of Southern California was honoring Pat Nixon with an exhibit called The Trojan First Lady, and she earned her master's degree there. And here's a fun fact. Pat Nixon was the first First Lady to obtain a graduate degree, and she got that from USC. Yeah, isn't that cool?
It is.
So the Richard Nixon Foundation asked me to do some research and find archival photos related to Pat Nixon's time at USC and her lasting ties, because she was the Marshal of the Rose Parade in the early 1970s. So they wanted pictures of events like that and photos from her time at USC in the 1930s. So I made a lot of trips to USC to work with the team at the Town and Gown Building. I found the photos, I wrote the captions, and I set up the exhibit. And finally, there was a formal event at USC with Pat Nixon's granddaughter, Melanie, in attendance, and the president of USC. Everyone was there. It was a huge deal. They announced a scholarship. And so that was the official revealing of the exhibit. And I'm so glad that you mentioned this, because at the time, I did not receive what I felt was the proper credit for my work. And that was very hurtful to me at the time. But from that, I learned a valuable lesson, and that is to never expect credit, even if you think it's right. Sometimes you have to put your foot down, you have to be firm, you have to ask for it. And that's just a valuable lesson that I took from that kind of hurtful time.
I think that's really good advice.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes there's hard lessons learned.
Yes. So you also created an online exhibit to serve as a companion to that exhibit. I loved looking at all the pictures at the website. Where did you get the pictures?
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you enjoyed looking at the photos. I'm really fortunate to have hard copies of those photos in my own private collection, so I can look at them and revisit that time in my career. But most of the images came from the Richard Nixon Library, and several of them also came from the USC archives.
Okay, because looking at them, I felt like a lot of them looked like official photos, but some of them looked like they could have been, you know, just candid family photos. So I wasn't sure.
It depends on the time frame of the photo. If it was ones from the Rose Parade in the early 70s, there could have been an official photographer there snapping photos. But if there were photos from her time at USC in the 1930s, then those were personal.
Got it. And it was while you were working at the FDR Library that you got to meet the first woman Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, right? Please tell me all about that.
Yes, that's correct. I was working with the public programming team at the FDR Library. And because I had curated the Read My Pins exhibit, which was Madeleine Albright's exhibit that she had on all of the pins that she collected while she was Secretary of State, they asked me to be one of the people at the library to greet her when she arrived. And I knew who Madeleine Albright was, of course, but I didn't know too much about her. But the more that people at the library started talking about her and talking about her coming, the more nervous I became. So when the big day arrived, I was nervous. And that was really one of the only times I was nervous when I've met kind of a famous, well-known person. I guess I just got it all out of my system at the time. But yeah. When I shook her hand, she had these beautiful blue eyes, and she shook my hand so firmly, but not too firm, not to suffocate it or anything, but she smiled at me and she made me feel like I was the only person in the room. And she made me feel important, even though I was just an intern. And her conversations, they were just filled with you know, so many great stories about working with President Clinton and traveling overseas to meet with dignitaries. So she could be very serious about policy and diplomacy, but yet she also had these lighthearted jokes and a great sense of humor. So she was really an amazing woman, and meeting her made a lasting impression on me, for sure.
I can imagine. I mean, without aging myself too much, I was a kid when she became Secretary of State, and I've just always thought that was so amazing that she was the first woman Secretary of State, and I would want to give her a hug.
Well, she was an easy person to do that with, actually, once you kind of felt like you knew her a little bit. She was just kind of, she was a grandmother, and so she had this grandmotherly persona that she portrayed. And yes, and then a couple years later, I was fortunate enough to meet Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice spoke so highly of Madeleine Albright, and she just was always inspired by her. And even though they were on different sides of the aisle politically, they had a great rapport and a great respect for one another.
As they should. I think any time a woman advances, it should be celebrated, regardless of
absolutely.
I think it's important.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yes. So what presidents and first ladies have you written articles about?
Oh, you're making me reach back into the archives of my memory here. Well, of course, I've written about Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt and Richard and Pat Nixon, but I've also written about Harry Truman and John F. Kennedy. So as you mentioned, I focus on the 20th century. So I've stuck to that time frame so far.
I love that. So Eleanor Roosevelt had a home named Valkill. I know that you spent some time researching and restoring original photographs at Valkill. This is so amazing. Please tell me everything about it.
Well, before Valkill became a National Historic Site, and after Eleanor Roosevelt's death in 1962, it was privately owned and changed hands many times. But in 1984, it became a National Historic Site, and the National Park Service took over and they opened it to the public. But because it was privately owned, so much of Mrs. Roosevelt's private photographs and other belongings, furnishings became dispersed. And the National Park Service is still working today to restore a lot of Valkill. So I was hired to restore the original photographs that Eleanor Roosevelt had hanging on her walls at her home, Valkill. So what I had to do was I had to study these old black and white archival photographs taken in 1962 by a photographer named William Stickel, and he took photographs of Valkill shortly after Eleanor Roosevelt passed away. So I had to get a magnifying glass and zoom in on these old historical photos to look and see what photos Eleanor Roosevelt had hanging up in her house. And then I had to identify the people in the photographs. So I worked a lot with her grandchildren, friends of hers, did a lot of research at the FDR Library and with the National Park Service trying to reveal the identities of the people in these photographs. And then I had to go hunt down the photographs. So some were privately owned by the family, and then others were in the FDR Library archives or National Park Service's archives. So then we had to make physical copies of these photographs, get them framed, hang them up on the wall. And I also wrote captions for the online digital exhibit called Eleanor's Pictures. It was a year and a half. It took a year and a half to do that whole project. It was very intense research, but I look at it as definitely some of the most gratifying work I've done in the historical field.
That's so fascinating to me. I love it. How did you get involved in that?
Well, when I was interning at the FDR Library, I made so many wonderful connections, and I always encourage people to make connections, whether you're working at a physical location, make connections at work, make connections on LinkedIn. You just never know how someone can help you or how you can help them in return. So after my internship with the FDR Library finished up, I was back down south visiting my family. But I wanted to go back to Hyde Park. There was more that I wanted to do there. I didn't feel like my time was done. So when I was down south with the family, I got a call from somebody with the National Park Service, and they said that they had heard about me. They had heard about how passionate I was about the legacies of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, and they had this great historical restoration project they were spearheading, and they were looking for somebody who loves history to do this project with them. And they offered it to me, and I accepted, and I went 20 hours back up north.
That's so cool. I think restoration of history is so important, the restoration and preservation.
Absolutely. I agree. And so many of Eleanor and Franklin's grandchildren were so enthusiastic about this project, and they were willing to do anything, even if it meant spending hours going through their own personal photos to help me find what I needed and to get this restoration project done. So I owe so many people a debt of gratitude for that.
That's so wonderful. And as long as we're talking about restoration, I wanted to talk about the Eleanor Roosevelt School, which was the last Rosenwald school built. It's currently being restored, and you were at the groundbreaking last fall. Please explain what a Rosenwald school is.
The Rosenwald School Fund was an initiative created by a philanthropist named Julius Rosenwald and Booker T. Washington in the early 20th century. And close to 5,000 schools across 15 southern states were built as a result of the fund. And the Rosenwald schools were responsible for educating more than 660,000 African American children across the US, which is amazing. And the Eleanor Roosevelt School is in Warm Springs, Georgia, where FDR had a home, and it was the last Rosenwald School to be built. It was commissioned by FDR in 1936, and he also financially contributed to its creation. He was there for the dedication in 1937, and he named it after his wife, who, as so many of us know, was a great civil rights champion. And for so many decades, the building just sat there empty without purpose for so many years. But Von Scher and DeBron Walker, a brother and sister from the Atlanta area, purchased it and are leading this much needed restoration. And in 2023, they received the Civil Rights Grant, and they've just recently garnered support from Saving Places, the National Trust for Preservation of African American History. And phase one of the restoration is underway, and we're all excited about that. So I just encourage everyone to visit the Eleanor Roosevelt School website and see how they can partner with Von Scher and DeBron to get this project done and get that building up and running again.
Yes, I think that's very important.
Yes, it's very exciting to see this rebirth of such a historic and important building.
Yeah. You've also helped the Eleanor Roosevelt Center with the Girls Leadership Worldwide program. I love this. It's such a great way to set an example for and inspire little girls. Would you tell me how you got involved in that and about your experience doing that?
When I was working with the National Park Service on the restoration project at Elk Hill, I heard about the Eleanor Roosevelt Center. It's a nonprofit. They were hiring for the Summer Girls Leadership Worldwide program. And I had heard so many wonderful things about the program. So after I spoke to my supervisor with the National Park Service, I decided to apply as the program assistant for the program and then also continue to work with the National Park Service on the restoration project. And thankfully, the Eleanor Roosevelt Center, they hired me, and there was 2 months of intense preparation for the Girls Leadership Worldwide, we call it GLW program. So there were so many logistical matters because we had 84 girls from 13 different countries, and they're all high school age. They came from all over for 2 sessions of 9-day leadership workshops. And we took them on a tour of Elk Hill, the FDR Library. Then we had workshop leaders come in and speak to the girls. And we also took them to New York City to meet the ambassador to the United Nations, which was so fascinating. And I also taught them a workshop that I put together on the life of Eleanor Roosevelt. It was very hard and exhausting work, but it was incredibly gratifying to see young women from different cultures all aspiring to lead like Eleanor.
That's so rewarding. I love it.
It
That
was.
just...
It really was some of the hardest work I've ever done, because when we were preparing and even when the program started, you know, sometimes we'd be in the office until after midnight, and then we'd have to start at 7 o'clock the next morning or even earlier if we were taking the bus to New York City. So sometimes we never slept, but it was so worth it to see the joy and how alive so many of those girls were becoming through the program.
I love it. I love that so much.
Yes.
With all of this First Lady talk, it's clear that you're interested in political history. But I love how you're also into entertainment, cultural, and musical history as well. I think all of it is important, and it all kind of coincides.
Yes.
You've written articles about Marilyn Monroe, Ginger Rogers, and Fred Astaire. Do you prefer the political or entertainment side? Why or why not?
That's a great question. And I don't know that I prefer one over the other, because I write about what I'm interested in at the time and whatever I feel compelled to write or research about. As far as political history goes, politics, whether it be what's happening today or history, I think we can all agree that it can become exhausting. And I don't know if it's as fun as entertainment history, because, you know, when I was researching Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, I got to watch all 10 of their movies and then listen to songs that Fred recorded. Or if I'm researching Loretta Lynn, I listen to her music, study her lyrics. And that's a little bit more fun than digging into legislative history, of course. But as you mentioned, it's all important. But a few years ago, I decided to start writing about music and entertainment history because I felt that I was becoming a little too comfortable writing about presidents and first ladies. And I could have easily continued to just work at presidential libraries, but I didn't want to pigeonhole myself as a historian. And I wanted to get outside of my comfort zone. And then I moved to Nashville and I dove deeper into the history of country music, which I grew up listening to classic country music. So I love that. And then I wrote about Loretta Lynn, Charley Pride, so many others. But every topic I write about is important in its own way. And these stories deserve to be told. And I just want to share that George Stevens Jr., who was a gentleman that I just interviewed for the article on Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, he just paid me the ultimate compliment by saying that I was honoring the memory of Fred and Ginger, and I was bringing their story up to date. And most of the people I write about, they lived and they passed away so many years ago, but their stories still matter, and they deserve to be told for new generations to appreciate them and maybe even be inspired by them.
Yeah, I know that a lot of the people that I do episodes about on my podcast, they tend to be more inspiring stories. I think, I hope, you know, I think that that's important. And oh my gosh, what a compliment to get.
Yes, I personally don't write about people that I don't like or I'm not inspired by in some way. And thankfully, I have the choice to make about who I want to research, because sometimes when I do research, I go very in depth and I interview people that knew them or who were related to them. And so I want to like the people that I research, and that doesn't mean they were perfect. By no means, nobody's perfect, but yet there's something inspiring about their life, their work, their legacy. And I just like to pull those little nuggets of inspiration from my research and share it with others.
Yeah, I'm interested in Tudor history, and there's a historical figure from that time period named Thomas Seymour, and I'm not a fan. He was not a good person, and I'm not going to do an episode about him because it's not fun. No one
No.
wants to hear me just,
Right.
you know, just talk about what a bad person this guy,
yeah,
or that
I agree.
I think this guy was. So
I agree. I don't like a whole lot of negativity, really. I don't like to write about negative things. I don't really like to speak about negative things. So I try to keep it more positive. And again, everybody goes through trials and tribulations, but I love to see how they came out of it, how they came out on top, or what they learned from it. That's what I like to research and learn about, and then focus on the good.
I agree. I agree. I'm the same way.
I think that's a good way to be.
So, Holly, what's next for you? If you can talk about it, what are you working on right now?
Well, it's been a long journey, but I'm so pleased that my article on Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers will soon be published in American Heritage Magazine. And I'm also finalizing the last article that I'm writing on Frank Sinatra's life and career, which people are just seem to be so interested in. And of course, it's Frank Sinatra. He was a fascinating man. And then I have an article coming out in the Historians Magazine on Fred Astaire's older sister, Adele Astaire, who was also a dancer and an actress. And then she married an English lord and she moved over to Ireland and lived in a castle. And then she moved back to the States. And her second husband was the assistant director of the CIA. So she lived a fascinating life. And I also have some other ideas that I'm mulling over in my head, but people will just have to stay tuned to see what that is.
Well, what you've been able to talk about is it sounds very interesting. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yes, it's fun research. All of it's great.
Oh, I bet. Holly, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the time to talk with me about all of this. What you do with preserving and restoring history and inspiring young girls while you're at it's all so important, and I'm so happy that you're doing it. Thank you. Where can people find you on social media?
They can visit my website, www.hollysnaith.com, connect with me on LinkedIn, and follow me on Medium where I write articles and also Instagram. And April, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for all that you do in sharing these important stories from history.
This has been an absolute joy. Thank you so much, Holly.
Thank you.
And that was my conversation with Holly Snaith. She's done so much, and I'm going to be sure to put links in the show notes about all the things we talked about so you can look into it, as well as links to her social media. Speaking of social media, be sure you're following Dorky Podcast, because I'm going to be putting a lot of information about Holly's projects on there as well. Thanks again to Holly for taking the time to come and talk with me. I really appreciate it. So that's it. That's the episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can reach me at dorkypod@gmail. Let me know what you think of the podcast. Let me know if I left something out or got something wrong, or let me know if there's something in particular in history that you'd like me to talk about. There's a Facebook group called Dorky Podcast, and all the other social medias are at Dorky Pod. Join them and be part of our growing community, but also to get extra tidbits about episode topics, like facts and pictures. There's also now two different ways to donate to the podcast if you'd like. You can donate through PayPal or Buy Me a Coffee. Links to both methods are on the podcast's website and in the show notes. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you're hearing it. It helps the podcast grow, but more importantly, your feedback will help me make this a better podcast. Until we meet again, friends.